Welcome. We are a mother-daughter podcast about all things surrogacy. Together, we have brought 8 beautiful babies into this world, and we would like to share our knowledge of surrogacy with those who want to educate themselves on the topic. This is Stop, Sit, Surrogate.
Hey everyone, welcome back to Stop Sit Surrogate with Kennedy and Ellen. Today we have a wonderful guest with us. We're going to let her introduce herself. She has both aspects, intended parent and the lawyer side. So take it away.
Hi, my name's Lisa Slaughter. I'm an attorney licensed in California, practicing in the area of gestational surrogacy, egg donation, embryo donation, and even the occasional known sperm donor. I'm a former intended parent with twins born through a surrogate named Angel, believe it or not, in 2010. Yes. So I'm happy to share both the personal, the practical, and with a perspective that not a lot of attorneys have in this field. So I'm happy to share it.
Yeah. Oh my gosh. Well, I'm excited to talk to you. And this is going to be really awesome.
I have one big question.
Sure.
So you said you got licensed in 1999 and you shared with us off camera that your journey started, what, 2009?
Yes.
For your own journey. So did you switch gears?
And I completely switched gears from big firm life, big corporate transactional. I did some litigation to really happy law, right? I get pictures of babies and intended parents and meet some phenomenal surrogates, some phenomenal intended parents. Many have become friends and repeat clients. I've had the opportunity to speak on surrogacy and the law and the practical component because of my perspective in Italy, in Australia, in Sweden, in Canada. So, and here in the US with some of the American Bar Association art specific tracks. And I'll explain that for your audience. You'll hear art and it's not the like a painting behind me. It's assisted reproductive technology, and that happens when you use someone else's, a third party helps you. It doesn't necessarily have to be a genetic third party like an egg donor. It can be a gestational surrogate, right, or something like that. So that's why it's referred to as assisted reproductive technology, art.
So, okay, I have two questions, and what we normally ask surrogates and intended parents is, how did you find out about surrogacy? How did you find out about it?
Well, I found out about it like a lot of intended parents find out about it, which is not through great news. So we went to an IVF doctor. My former husband and I, Brian, tried to get pregnant. And, you know, for me, it was miscarriage after miscarriage. We went to the fertility doctor who said, hey, sorry, you know, you can have a baby, but you're going to have it through gestational surrogacy. And, you know, none of the clients, you know, there's no Barbie the surrogate doll, right? There's no like, gee whiz, I can't wait to have my kids through surrogacy. Yay. Right. So it's pretty devastating for, I'd say for all intended parents. I know for me with my, my female clients, my intended mother clients, it carries an extra burden of really almost shame, right? Mm-hmm. Especially for somebody who's really, you know, I'm ambitious, I'm a type A. If I set out to do something, I can do it, but I had no control over my body, right? And didn't have this ability. And of course, you're concerned, how do I find a surrogate? What's going to happen? How much is this going to cost? Right. The number one question I get from most clients is she going to keep the baby? Right. What kind of rights do I have? Right. There's a lot of misinformation out there from some of the older news stories that are 20, 30 years old now. Right. And the law has really changed and kept up somewhat with technology. Right. So that we have, especially in California, a legal format and a legal statute and case law that eliminates that question, that it's the child of the intended parents from day one.
Yeah. Right.
Right. And it's true.
Yeah.
Because there's not, I don't know of any surrogate that, I think that's the, I always feel bad when I hear that, especially when it comes to intended mothers and their fear is, you know, like, what if this woman gets attached to my baby and things like that. And the shame aspect that we've that we've learned as surrogates, you know, that they can feel. It's heartbreaking, and we never, sometimes we also feel like, oh my gosh, how do we make you not feel like this? Like,
right.
like we don't want to say the wrong thing or yes. share the wrong thing, you right. know? And it's kind of like walking on eggshells, but in the most polite way.
Yes. Very sensitive. Our surrogate Angel was very sensitive about oh. that. And, you know, even when we were able to go to a couple of doctor visits, she was in North Carolina originally, and then oh. came out here to give birth. North okay. Carolina's laws at that time were kind of sort of clear, but not 100% like California's.
Yeah.
And even when she was in the hospital ready to give birth, and I'll tell this to intended parents because a lot of intended parents aren't aware of this, is typically for surrogacy, you'll have a social worker that'll be assigned at the hospital who mm-hmm. will help facilitate some of that.
Right.
Some social workers work in hospitals that have had a lot of surrogacies.
Yeah.
You know, some social workers know about it, but maybe this is their first and they refer to it as an adoption. And our surrogate would look at it and say, oh, honey, she's not adopting this baby. This baby's hers. Right. So, yeah, she was really great about that and kept us informed and, you know, with doctor visits and everything. She was wonderful about including yeah. and saying, hey, I am just the temporary keeper of these miracles for you. She was fantastic about it.
Oh, very sweet. Oh my
gosh. I have another question.
Yes.
Sorry, Mom. I promised that you can ask a question. No, because I don't want to forget to ask this. So when do you look for a lawyer? Because it's actually interesting. We had talked about this off camera, and I don't think we've ever asked this of any intended parent.
We didn't.
Because to us, we were talking about it. We're like, oh, well, a surrogate gets their lawyer after a match. So mm-hmm. like it kind of just never processed in our mind when an intended parent would have to get
when's the best time, right? Yeah. When's the best time to
well, actually, it's interesting you say that because I'm writing a book addressing exactly that. That's hopefully due to be, yeah, we've got the second draft in, but that's due to be published this spring. Is because I was really lucky. I had one of my very good friends happen to be a surrogacy attorney, right?
Okay.
We'd known each other years before, you know, when she was practicing law in another area. And I'd remembered that. And you literally, if you're an intended parent, you and our doctor was phenomenal, but they explain, hey, sorry, surrogacy is your only option. For some parents, it may be surrogacy and egg donation is your only option. Whatever that is, or sperm donation, or a combination of the two, whatever that is, here's a stack of paper. You need to find a surrogate or a donor, whatever it is. Yeah. Once you find one, we'll clear them, and then we'll see you back then, right? And right. you're left going, what just yeah. happened, right?
Overwhelming, yeah.
Right, and you get a nice stack of papers, usually a list of agencies, et cetera, what have you. And that's the time to call an experienced attorney, okay. right? Okay. Because it's not that agencies are bad, but a lot of clients I get, if they've come after they've selected an agency, either maybe have selected an agency and not known what to ask them,
mm-hmm.
been very surprised that, hey, if your surrogate doesn't medically clear, or that your surrogate, they don't present you with medically cleared surrogates, and here's why, right? Mm-hmm. It's prohibitively expensive.
Yeah.
You don't get your money back. The good agencies will do a rematch for you within a certain period of time, but it's not like you can recoup the medical costs okay. that you've just spent, right? And do you want to go with an agency and ask them for, you know, and some agencies are negotiable. Do you want to ask them for something else? Do you want to try to clear two surrogates at one time just to mm-hmm. hedge your bets? Or what's coming up now a lot in the industry are concierge agencies, yes. right? So they'll go and take, okay, what would you like? We want a surrogate, you know, in this location, is willing to carry twins or what have you, whatever it is. And they'll go out to a variety of agencies and try to find and say, hey, send me surrogates that might match that profile. And it's a lot less expensive in some ways because you're going to get a variety and know what's out there instead of, hey, sign an agency contract or look at a series of profiles. And frankly, most intended parents don't know what to ask.
Right.
Right. Again, there's no, you know, playbook. so to speak, that says this is what to ask. I mean, some of it's going to be obvious, like, why do you want to become a surrogate and what happened in your last surrogacy journey? But other things like, hey, how's your husband feel about this? Mm-hmm. Or, you know, have you talked to your kids? Or what's your support system? Right. Mm-hmm. What do you do for work? Oh, you know, I work as an X-ray technician. Well, that may not be the best. And I say that jokingly, but that may not be the best, you know, fit for you. Right.
Right.
So things like that are really important, or even what to ask the agency. Do you do a criminal background check? Right. Mm-hmm. People assume that they do, but not every agency does. Right. Do you review the medical records before, so you know whether or not they've had an early birth or premature birth or anything like that? Right. Do you gather them? Not that they're qualified, but it's easy to see. Right. Do you have a Zoom interview with them and their husband? Right. Mm-hmm. So, you know, each agency has a different approach on how they screen surrogates, and agencies in general want good surrogates because that's how they get more business. Right. Mm-hmm. So there's an incentive for them to, you know, provide good matches. But really, some agencies require a certain amount of money up front. Then once the surrogate's cleared, then it's when she's pregnant. Some agencies require it all up front. I mean, intended parents, you know, don't understand their options. They don't even know what to ask.
Right.
And we were really fortunate in having a good friend help us through that process. Okay. Right.
Yeah.
And again, a lot of people think, oh, well, agencies are regulated. They're not. Mm-mm. I mean, I have to go through continuing education. I have a license. I do something wrong. Right. You can sue me. You can report me. Same with your doctor. Same with your escrow company. Right. But not with agencies. You know, is that good or bad? Well, I mean, I think it's interesting that a daycare center has to be licensed, but a surrogacy agency, which takes just a lot of money and a lot of hope and a lot of emotions, doesn't.
Yeah.
But that's fine as long as you do your due diligence. And usually an attorney, well, most attorneys in this field, and my colleagues, we've worked with certain agencies for years. There's surrogacy professionals group. We have a little, you know, list of, hey, watch out for this. I mean, I've certainly heard horror stories of intended parents who've lost money or have had things really misrepresented to them.
Yeah. Did you find your surrogate angel through an agency or independent?
Agency. We found it through an agency. The independent route at that particular time was, you know, and I was working full time, and so was my husband at the time. So that's a big commitment and a lot of unknown, especially when I hadn't experienced a pregnancy, right? So, gosh, I don't even know what it's like. How am I going to know what to? I mean, I'm going to have to become, you know, essentially agency, you know, quasi doctor, you know, intended mom, you know, and have a lot of interface with the surrogate, which wasn't an issue, but that's a very precarious relationship that you don't want to. And my philosophy as an attorney is preserve that relationship. Sometimes there are differences or sometimes, you know, misunderstandings, even though the contract is very clear. And some intended parents are really anxious, right? And that may put the surrogate off. And some surrogates, you know, they're busy. They have kids. Mm-hmm. They're usually working. They have a family. They can't necessarily text back in 2 minutes, right?
Right.
So sometimes that's usually, frankly, the only thing is if you've got a good agency that did good vetting and a good match, it's not going to be, and a good contract that's really clear, it's not going to be an issue. Yeah. But when there are, it's really about having that distance, right? And I don't, you know, the other thing too, if the independent route, I mean, can save a considerable amount of money, and there are new apps like NoDow, right? Which is a new app of independent matching that actually has more support built into it than say, if you were to just go to, for lack of a better term, I'm not saying you can find somebody there, but Facebook Marketplace, right?
Yeah.
Okay. So an app like NoDow is going to give you a much better education in the process of going select, and you can do certain things a la carte, like the screening and nothing more, or the screening and support through the journey. Right. So that varies, and that's a very cost-saving option.
Yeah.
Right.
Right.
So that option wasn't available to us.
Right.
So we went through an agency, which was a great agency called the Fertility Agency. Now it used to be called Agency for Surrogacy Solutions. So I'm still in touch with those owners to this day. And they had their intent, they had their kids, their intended parents too, which was a selling factor for us. So,
yeah.
You know, not that agencies started by surrogates are lesser or more, it just was a level of comfort for me.
Right.
For sure.
Right. Never been through it yourself. Right. I totally agree. Yeah,
exactly.
Right.
Okay. I do. I like it when an agency is owned by either an intended parent or a surrogate. Yeah. Like, it's just like, okay, you know what's going, you're not just like some third party random right. that like saw this and was like, yeah, we can
yeah, we can do this. Yeah. I think there's an element. Yeah. It's a very sensitive, very private, very personal journey for both parties.
Yeah.
Right. And I think you hit it on the head that having been there and understanding not just the process, but the practical and the emotional component is a really, really added benefit.
Yeah, it is.
It's agreed. Huge. It's huge. I have, I'm curious, because this was back, you say 2009 or 2010?
2009, we started the journey, and 2010, the kids were born.
Okay. Wow, that went fast.
That went really fast.
It did. Wow. And one sec. And were you looking to have twins, or was this just woo-hoo?
No. Okay. And actually, I heard a great podcast with one of the leading IVF physicians down at San Diego Fertility Center. And back then, it was it was usually 3-day embryos. It wasn't 5-day embryos, right?
Right.
And meaning, for those of you out in the audience who wondering how the 3-day, the 5-day is, the embryo kind of sits in a dish for 3 days back then. And the embryologist, which is a really core component of the process with your IVF doctor, takes a look and says, huh, that's looking good. That's looking like an A+, nice little round little group of cells there that seem to be getting along well and growing. And then there is something called I always get the acronym messed up. PGD, pre, or
I know what you're talking about. Is it PGT?
Diagnostics, I think.
Yeah, I know what you're talking about.
Yeah, it's where they take a little dash of what's of that embryo that's being formed. It's really a group of cells, right? Yeah. When you look at it, and taking a look and checking some chromosomes, some genetics, right? Not everything, but just the basics, right? Does it have the right number of chromosomes? Is everything kind of looking like straight, like the X's and the Y's? It's a very general description. Mm-hmm. So they were not recommending that because they didn't know at that time. It was like, look, kind of leave them alone, yeah, right?
Right.
And let's take the best ones. And your embryos are graded A, B, C, D. Yeah, and that just means A looks like it's doing well, B looks like it could and it's coming along, and C looks like it's struggling, but who knows what will happen, right?
Right.
Because there's so much we don't know, or doctors don't know about why some embryos implant and why some embryos don't. Because if that were the case, you'd never have a failed transfer, right?
Right. Exactly. Right.
So at the end of the day, at that time, it was, hey, we'll transfer two and hope one takes.
Okay.
Right.
Okay.
Mm-hmm. We'll transfer the best ones you have, or one of each, or what have you. We didn't know what the sex was. We didn't do sex selection, but we'll transfer some and let's see what happens. And they took. Now they're typically 5-day embryos. Mm-hmm. And as you know, when this is being broadcast in 2024, IVF doctors have a much better, more accurate, I should say, protocol for embryo transfers and the gestational period in outside of the embryo. And so they're, unless there's some extenuating circumstances, and each doctor is different, it's rare that you'll have a 2-embryo transfer.
Right.
And a lot of surrogates don't necessarily want a 2-embryo transfer because it's a risk to them to carry twins. It usually means a C-section and some bed rest, not always.
Yeah.
But yeah, so that's less common now, is a 2-embryo transfer.
Right.
Yes, yeah. It is. That was
I had a 4-embryo transfer.
Wow. And you carried a singleton or twins?
3. Triplets took.
Oh, wow. Which is really rare and really, really risky.
They were really bad eggs. And so they just said, let's just, this is 2002. Let's just throw a bunch in there. Let's do it. And we're all sitting in the room going, yeah, let's do it. And dear God. Yeah. Three. Okay.
There you go. Yeah. That's where we don't see that very much.
Right. Anymore. No. Mm-mm. Yes. In fact, when Kennedy was starting her journey, she came and said, okay, they're going to implant one. And I like got all crazed about, I'm like, gosh, just one? What?
Freaked me out.
Yeah. Freaked her out. I felt so bad. Cause I'm like, oh my God. And of course it took. Of course it took, right? Like the science is so different from back then.
Yeah, the science, it's really advancing in the area of reproductive medicine, most definitely.
Yeah, which is great. It's great.
Lisa, I'm curious, how did you match with Angel? Like, I'm curious back then, were you shown profiles or was she shown profiles or were you both shown?
It was both, right? Okay. From my understanding, she was shown, I think the way that it worked really was, that once the intended parent matched with the surrogate, and I think most agencies do it this way, then they'll send the parent profile to the surrogate and say, hey, you know, do you like these people? Right. Rather than send a bunch of, because, you know, the intended parents may not match, right? Or may not select that particular surrogate. And then that, you know, it kind of feels bad. It's like a Tinder swipe left, right? Who wants that? So, so that's how we were shown a series of profiles, picked a surrogate, and then there was a telephone call at that time because there wasn't a face-to-face. And after that, we said, yes, for sure, we want to go forward. And she and her husband said the same. Yeah. And then she was sent to medical clearance.
Right.
Wow.
Okay. And so essentially you picked.
Basically. Yes, we picked. Mm-hmm. Right. Yeah. Exactly. And, and we had, you know, our requirements were pretty minimal. I think we did say, you know, would you carry twins and, how is, you know, nutrition was a really big thing for me and, you know, avoid exposure to certain things, right? Like don't do total new construction, right? With all the, you know, while you're pregnant, just basic stuff like that. Nothing, you know, extreme, right? Yeah. And she was very into that and open to that. So that was a really big, that was a big thing. And again, as an intended parent, and I tell my clients, all you can do is put the odds in your favor. Select a surrogate you like, surrogate who you think you can communicate with, an agency that you trust, an attorney that you can access and who's thorough. And then, you know, it's up to the universe.
Mm-hmm. It is.
Yeah, it is.
Yep. But set yourself up for success and hopefully that'll come, right?
Absolutely. Exactly. And the other thing that we did, and I don't think that this is as important as it used to be, was we wanted a surrogate, what's referred to as a proven surrogate, meaning a surrogate who had gone through surrogacy before, had a healthy delivery of a child, which she had. And in fact, she and I became such good friends that, you know, our twins were born early, 34 weeks, and we're in the NICU for a little bit.
Yeah.
And she was there and her kids were there and I wanted to see the babies and all that other kind of stuff, that we met another couple, also with the same perinatologist, and they had to have a surrogate for their next child. And we matched them and she carried another journey for them. So
very sweet.
Yeah. That was really great.
That's cool.
Awesome.
That's cool.
How did the pregnancy go?
Right.
The pregnancy was great, right? Okay. I mean, they had, you know, twin baby A and baby B, as they're referred to. Mm-hmm. Toward the end of the surrogacy, when she came out here, like, you know, I think around like week 31 or something like that, she came out here at the end of the second trimester, just in case.
Okay.
She started having, I'm not quite sure, of early contractions.
Braxton right? Hicks, yeah.
You would know more better than me, yes.
But fake ones, but they hurt. Yeah. Like,
well, I don't know if she dilated or not or what was going on. But Dr. Tavish, who was our perinatologist out here in LA, I'm not sure if he even still practices, but he put her in the hospital and then had her on I think it was Pitocin, which kind of slows down the labor process. And then eventually it was, okay, you know, you don't want to be on Pitocin so long. So they they prepared for a C-section, and because they were premature, they give I think it's a hormone shot or something to
steroids
help
for their lungs.
Steroids to help the lungs develop.
Right.
And then we had a C-section.
Okay.
And it's interesting because everybody says, hey, what happens? My clients say, hey, what happens in the delivery room? And there's a section in almost every contract, surrogacy contract, that says, hey, you're allowed to be in the delivery room. But if the hospital says too many people in this delivery room, the surrogate gets to choose her supporting partner or her support system to be there first and foremost.
Right. Well,
that happened to us. Okay. Angel had never had a C-section.
Okay.
It's kind of a big deal.
Major right? surgery. Yeah.
Right. It, exactly.
It is.
So she wanted to make sure that her husband was there, but okay. she was also, you know, conflicted and knew, you know, she wanted me mom in there too.
Yeah.
So what we did is we alternated, right? Oh. Okay. Franklin, her husband, and I alternated.
Okay.
And then when Angel got more comfortable, right, I was there. And literally, they hand the babies. If you're there as an intended parent, not all intended parents can make it. I mean, babies have their own schedule.
Right? Yeah. Yeah.
And especially international parents.
Mm-hmm.
And handed us the babies. And we cut the cord. And then they were, you know, whisked away. And we saw them, you know, a couple hours later.
Wow.
Wow.
Yeah. So that was really great. So I literally have those practical Aww. Experiences to yeah. share with clients.
It's awesome. Yeah. Very
That's
fun.
Very sweet.
Obviously she had kids, right?
Yes.
Because part of, you have to have kids. How were her kids during the surrogacy? Like how, you know, her age range, were they under 10?
They were under 10. I think her daughter was like 12. Okay. I think, and she had two boys and a daughter, and okay. they were really into it because mom had done it before.
Okay.
And they loved seeing the babies, and they couldn't believe it was twins, and they were in California. So it was, hey, mom, do it again. Right. Oh, it was fun.
So fun. So
yeah,
cute.
It was really fun for them.
That's awesome.
So sweet.
So that she has to come out here at like end of second trimester, like you said, like to establish being here. That's a lot of extra cost on you. Or did she come and live with you guys?
Well, no, we tried that. I never recommend that. It wasn't comfortable for her. And then we lived at my former husband's parents, and it really made sense to give her own independent space.
Yeah.
So we ended up doing that. And really, the laws have changed in so many states that giving birth in North Carolina is something, you know, if the transfer happens in California, California has jurisdiction. Mm-hmm. Giving birth in some states, they'll honor a California judgment of parentage, like Virginia and some other place, Arkansas, some other places that we work with. And if not, then we've worked with local counsel in, say, North Carolina and the other states that are very favorable, right? To that Maine or what have you, and helped get that the parentage and coordinated that with local counsel the whole time. Yeah. So I think that that's not necessarily needed anymore. Although I do have a lot of intended parents in California who want their surrogate to deliver at a specific hospital. So they'll relocate them in California, right? Okay. Closer to the hospital that they want because of their relationship, or that's where they, you know, if the intended mother had a child before or what have you, or oversee their gynecologist, and that can be done. But again, that's where a good attorney comes in.
Yeah.
Because I have a lot of celebrity clients and they tend to want to deliver at Cedars.
Cedars. Yeah,
well, right. Cedars doesn't take insurance, right? Really? I mean, almost no insurance.
Yeah.
I mean, they take some, I'm sure, but typically it's cash pay, right? Uh-huh. So that's,
That's crazy.
Well, welcome to
LA. Yeah,
exactly. So, but part of it is just something as you want to make sure that the surrogate still has insurance because, and is seen by her local doctor, local OB, who will then coordinate with the OB at the delivering hospital, right? To make sure everything's there. The surrogate will likely have to come to a couple of doctor visits or what have you, but that's important. And you raise another issue if I can bring it.
Yeah.
One of the things I tell my intended parents to have is a contingency plan, because the idea of the surrogate goes into labor, right?
Right.
And she's down in, you know, let's say Hermosa Beach, right? To drive to Cedars, because again, the more children women have, the faster the next labor is much faster, right?
You would think.
You would think. And the law of averages says that it is, right?
Agreed. Yeah. Agreed. Yes.
So you want that surrogate to go to the first hospital that can deliver that baby, right?
Right.
You don't want it in the car on the way in the event that there's, you know, an issue or something like that happens, right?
Right.
So I always say to intended parents, have a contingency plan with your surrogate. Find the closest hospital, right, that's got a level 2 or 3 NICU, which we can discuss later.
Yeah.
Right. Ideally a level 4 if you can. Mm-hmm. And so that in the event of an emergency, that's the hospital you're going to know she's at, right? Yes. Okay. Just in case, right? Because she'll call you. You might not be able to be reached. Definitely she'll call the agency, right? So it's not, she's not scrambling to know where that hospital is. And you're not panicked as an intended parent going, right, oh my God, she's in labor. Where is she? Right.
Yeah, right.
And of course the agency lets us know because we need to send the documents, the legal documents saying you're the parent, right?
Right.
You know, and sometimes people forget to tell us, you know, huh? Sometimes we're the last to know, right?
Wow.
And sometimes I feel like an OB, I get calls in the middle of the night. Hey, such and such is delivering at a different hospital. Can you email them the judgment?
Oh my gosh. Wow.
So, goodness.
Wow. Can the surrogate take the judgment, a copy of it with her?
She can, but okay. Usually at labor, what we do is we always send it in advance to the birth clerk, right?
Mm-hmm.
And the birth clerk will typically give it to the social worker, depending on if we know it's a C-section or not. If it's planned, then we'll also send it. We try to send it to the charge nurse and OB, okay, right? Just so they know as well. Yeah. Sometimes that works, but you know, they're always changing shifts. So, you know, the day shift may not give it to the night shift if that's when the baby's born. But yes, yeah, and we give it to the intended parents. The nice thing in California is now everything's done electronically.
Yeah.
So, and that we just email the court emails us a certified copy, and that certified copy is now acknowledged by Vital Records as an original through the law.
Wow.
So we're good to go. We don't have to necessarily overnight it, but we, you know, we provide hard copies.
Yeah.
In fact, the attorney that was represented us gave us a copy of that framed for our baby shower.
Sweet.
Which is really, yeah, it was really, really unique little so gift if you sweet think about
very
it.
Cute. Yeah. It's very cute. Yeah.
Lisa, I'm curious, how did you then, why did you then transition career-wise?
Mm-hmm.
A couple of reasons. One is having twins is a frick of a lot of work. Okay.
I'm sure.
Especially having twins who are premature and require a lot of feeding, right?
Yeah.
And a lot of attention and just, you know, making sure. And that's pretty incompatible with big firm life.
Okay.
It's, yeah, you know, very incompatible to do a 9-to-5 away from home.
Oh,
right.
Sure.
And an attorney's, I mean, I don't know who really works 9-to-5.
Yeah. No.
You know, as an attorney or anybody, frankly, yeah, these days. Right?
Right.
So for me, it was a way to be able to be at home. To be able, I'd love the industry. I found the legal issues to be fascinating. I had a strong transactional background, mm-hmm, had a litigation background. So I knew where issues could arise,
mm-hmm,
just from, you know, various perspectives when you're dealing with human beings in a medical setting with, yeah, emotions and money, right?
Yeah, right.
That's a lot.
Yeah.
So it was a natural, and my agency began referring me some work, right?
Okay.
And reached out to a few others, and the attorney gave me some surrogate reviews, and I was kind of off and running.
There you go.
I think people enjoyed an intended parent who was guiding them, who could give them some practical,
yeah,
some personal, and some strong legal advice.
Absolutely. Yeah.
I would think that if I was an intended parent, I would probably want
get out
somebody who can relate, yes, to me and be like, right, oh yeah, like what you're feeling is normal, or oh no, like I understand that fear, like we can word it like this in the contract to make you feel better, but like, you know, just things like that. Like I,
well, some of it was even just what I learned, which was, you know what, you're, because Brian and I, my former husband and I, were confused because we had 2 different delivery dates. Okay.
Okay.
You had the IVF physician's delivery date,
because, oh,
there,
right,
are 3-day embryos.
Right.
And that's based on, if you, for intended parents, if you have 3 or 5 day embryos, it's like they've gone to graduate school. Okay.
Uh-huh.
Embryos are super smart, and they get an extra 2 weeks if they're 5-day embryos, right, of gestation.
Okay.
Right?
Funny.
So, and a obstetrician bases it on, well, gee whiz, we don't know when the conception occurred.
Yeah.
So we're going to go off your last period. So there could be a 2 to 3 right, week or 1 week difference. Right.
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 So we had 2 different due dates. So I always tell intended parents, weeks gestation. It's on average 34 to 36 weeks from the date of transfer for a 5-day embryo. It's not the typical 40, mm-hmm. right?
Right.
It, you know, so don't be confused if your OB says one thing uh-huh. and your doctor, right. Your IVF doctor gives you another, right? Yeah.
Right.
And I say, you know, plan toward the earlier right. of the IVF doctor. And even something practical, a lot of my foreign intended parents, I say, you know what? Make sure you bring a car seat to pick up your baby, because in wow. California, they won't let yeah. you out yeah. of the hospital until yeah. they see you put that baby into that car seat.
Right.
I tell them, let me tell you, car seats have gotten really, really complicated. Yes. We had to practice.
Oh gosh.
Yeah, especially yes. for, yeah. For I mean, sure. yeah, they've really, which is good. The technology has advanced. Yeah. That's great.
Yeah.
But yeah, I mean, just some practical stuff like that. Right.
Right.
So
right. That's interesting. Wow.
Very interesting. Well, that's very cool though, that you can, that you
see
can
it
give
from
your
that
insight.
Perspective.
Yeah. Yes.
Sure. Yeah. I mean, sure. it's kind of like you have a friend in the business.
Yeah.
Yeah. And especially yeah. from a mom, an intended yeah. mom perspective. Yes. Like there's a lot of males we've interviewed that are doing this practice. And I get that they can see it from the intended fathers, but the intended mothers, there's just so much more.
It's different.
Yeah. Yeah, it is.
It's just different, right? It really is. And it's funny because I represent a lot of same sex male couples,
yeah.
right?
Yeah.
And I'll never forget, we had one client from Italy come and show us the baby when we had, you know, offices oh. and before COVID. And we were saying, Giovanni, here's how you hold this baby. I know you really, I just want to, you know, as that instinct comes in, yeah. okay, here's the head. Oh, Lisa, thank you so much. I wondered.
So cute.
You know, it's all kinds of great stories. I've had clients from Saudi Arabia to Africa to Australia. It's been
wow,
really,
gosh.
Yeah, it's been really
amazing.
Great.
And they all come to the U.S. because the U.S. is clearly the most accepted form.
Well,
of
yeah, the legal process is yeah. very clear. And yeah. frankly, we have some of the best technology here for IVF. Yeah.
It's great.
Right. And it's yeah. been, you know, it started really down in San Diego, and you had surrogates that a lot of began in San Diego through the military, right?
Yeah, right.
Military wives who were there and say, hey, I can, right. you know, earn some extra money for the family, be home with my kids.
Yeah.
So, right. yes. And it's illegal in a lot of countries.
Mm-hmm. It is. And it's sad.
You know, yeah. and it's in some countries, I'm dealing with a client now who's having difficulty getting citizenship in France for their children.
Oh, wow. Oh. Through surrogacy. Wow.
Yeah, that's been going on for a few French parents,
oh,
right?
Wow.
You know, and I've you know, advising certain clients to go, hey, if you're close to LA, or, you know, rather than what I'm finding is that consulates from various countries, Israel, Italy, Germany, some of the more European countries, and even mm-hmm. from Australia, actually, and some of the Scandinavian countries here in the U.S. have dealt with surrogacy. So uh-huh. getting your citizenship mm-hmm. in through for the child through, you know, the dual citizenship, depending on the country,
mm-hmm.
Is really advantageous, right? Because sure. if you go back home, you may or may not get somebody who's go oh, surrogacy. Oh, you know, just throws up their hands and go, I don't know what to do with this. Right.
Right.
And a lot right. of consulates here, especially in the greater LA area or California in general, really. And in even Texas, I've had a lot of success mm-hmm. in Atlanta for those on the East Coast in New York.
Oh, how interesting. So because I've had I've helped two international families, one Australia and one from Asia. And they got their dual citizenship while here, or, you know, like I had to fill out paperwork while here. So it's interesting right. to hear that some people go back home and do it there because right. I've granted I'm California. So maybe that's just how California works, but that's just.
They didn't have the right attorney, Kennedy.
Oh, okay. okay. okay.
That's why.
Saying it's better wow. to do it here.
Yeah, right.
Consulate's here than trying to take it back where you.
It can be, right? Yeah. It really yeah. can.
Depending on where it is, for sure.
Yeah.
For sure.
Very interesting. Do you. You don't have to answer. You don't have to answer this if you don't want to. I'm curious because each lawyer is different, I guess, right? Mm-hmm. Are you paid hourly or are you a flat fee?
Oh, I wish I was hourly.
Oh, okay.
I wish I was hourly. Aww.
Well, I know because you honestly, you put in so much time and effort and work and yeah. like things that you don't right. even expect to do are going to pop up. Like So you're flat fee.
We're flat fee. Yes, that's okay. Everybody is, and okay. I understand that as an Makes intended sense. Parent, it's nice to have a, you know, a
expected costs. Yeah,
expected costs, right. And my consultations are comprehensive. So, but also, I mean, it's nice. I mean, I've talked to intended mothers who've given me a call and go, Lisa, am I going to just automatically fall in love with that baby the minute I see it? And, I mean, you know, just all kinds of emotional issues that come up, right?
Yeah.
So, yeah, I mean, and I enjoy it. I mean, I really love it. So it's not really work, but right. I do keep sometimes crazy hours. I'll tell the kids, hey, I got a call with Australia. Hey, I'm on with Tokyo, right? Yeah. You know, right. At late hours.
Yeah. So I think you do. Do you still have a relationship with your surrogate, Angel?
We lost touch with her.
Oh,
we've lost touch with her. She's, you know, aged out of being a surrogate. And I think she and her husband got divorced. So we've lost touch with her.
Okay.
Did the kids met her.
And the kids know how they got here. Yes.
Absolutely.
Okay.
Absolutely. We were very forthcoming about that. Mm-hmm. You know, times have changed. I got some weird looks from older people, and other people go, gosh, if that technology, they were their only option was adoption, right? Mm-hmm. And for my former husband, whose father was a Holocaust survivor, genetically, it was really important to continue the line, got right? You. That was a big deal, which is one of the reasons why we chose that, right?
Okay.
So,
ooh, that's powerful.
God. Yeah.
Yeah. You never even think of those backstories. You never even think of that. Like,
no, wow. I know. Yeah.
That just made me pause. My God.
But you know what? Genetics don't make a parent.
No, I'm adopted. I had the best exactly. parents in the world. Best
yeah. At the, world. At the end of the day, you know, egg donors, what have you, right. sperm donation, you know, genetics right. just, they just don't make a parent, right? Mm-hmm. If nope. they did, we wouldn't have adoptions, right? We wouldn't have a lot of things that we have, right?
Yep. Agreed. Exactly. 100%.
So I do have a question. So, and I think I know the answer, but when it comes to, so say you have a surrogate, say you have intended parents that you're representing that are in California, but the surrogate is in, we'll talk about North Carolina, because that's what we talked about earlier. Which laws apply? North Carolina, correct?
Well, actually it's interesting because the laws where the child is born only apply to the extent that the laws of the state apply as to how a child's parents are recorded. And that's vital records law, right?
Okay. Yes.
Okay. So, for example, in North Carolina, well, let me take Arizona, actually, because it's a very common area and it's a little less complicated. So for example, in Arizona will honor a California judgment, just like Virginia.
Okay.
So what we do there is we send that judgment to vital records in Arizona.
Okay.
And Arizona then records the parenthood. They have a special way and you put the surrogate on and you take her off and whatever. But the only birth certificate that's issued is the one with the intended parents on it, right?
Okay.
Now, if you were to apply Arizona law and make that contract under Arizona, that's illegal. Arizona is really clear about surrogacy, compensated surrogacy being illegal, right?
Oh.
So you wouldn't, yes. So you
I didn't know Arizona was still illegal.
I know, I didn't know that either.
Wow. Okay.
To have an Arizona contract for gestational surrogacy, right?
Right.
Versus California law governing a surrogacy contract, right?
Huh. Okay.
So, and there are other states that are kind of like that, or other states where it's not even really clear if they'd honor a surrogacy under their laws, right?
Okay.
But their courts frequently, it's called the good, fair, full. Now I forgot it. Okay. It's a constitutional law, full faith and credit clause. It's based on the full faith and credit law clause in the Constitution. Basically, you know, we're going to honor one judgment from another state, just like here. Otherwise, anytime you were, you know, owed somebody money and got a judgment, you just move to another state, right? And say, you can't get me, right? As an example. Right.
Yeah.
But states do have their own, what's referred to as police powers, their own ability to legislate certain public policy, right? Which is why all states don't necessarily recognize a California judgment. Now, the same-sex community in a couple of Supreme Court cases has really broken through that in the context of an adoption, but not in the context of a surrogacy pre-birth judgment, right?
Okay.
So I think that will, for all you constitutional scholars out there, I think at some point, and hopefully I'll be a part of that decision, I think that will be the full faith and credit clause will eventually be deemed by the Supreme Court to apply with judgments of parentage from other states.
Okay. Amazing. Okay. That would be lovely.
I have a great segue. You were talking about legislations and all this kind of stuff. Would you care to give your opinion on what's happening in Alabama?
Well, it's interesting. Absolutely. It's okay. Quite fascinating. And it's actually, you know, I get a lot of calls from clients whose embryos have been destroyed, right? Awesome. Or lost, yeah. Right?
Right.
And the whole idea is, and a lot of embryo disposition after divorce and death issues. I don't do those. I refer them to a litigator who does.
Okay.
But the point being is that at that particular case, and I'm sure there are legal scholars out there that will correct me if I'm wrong, is the negligence was so egregious.
Oh, it's yes. Crazy.
That you want to be able to punish them, but and the best way to do that would be essentially the loss of a future, right? Because yeah. That's what that is. It's the yeah. Loss of future progeny. And that's really tough, right?
Wow. Yeah.
So how do you do that under the law? Well, it's a wrongful death case, right?
Right.
Now, in order to have a wrongful death case, you've got to have a human being that was lost. Right.
Right.
So that's where that crosses the line.
Right.
That's
right.
Where that legal fiction comes in.
Okay.
Do I think that's, I think what we're going to see eventually, and I don't know that it's particularly going to be in Alabama, is we're going to see laws adopted to more of that destruction of embryos, right?
Yeah.
Rather than personhood, than the death of a person,
right?
In a wrongful death. I would hope that that would be what it would be, just as we've seen surrogacy laws
mm-hmm.
change and reflect mm-hmm. the changing parentage and attitudes toward things.
Agreed.
I mean,
right.
it's, for example, we still have frozen embryos, hoping that not to have more kids. Oh, no.
Yeah.
But in stem cells, right?
Yes,
for the kids in the event that in the future they need them. Now, whether or not the embryos will thaw based on the technology that was used when they froze, you know, who knows, right?
Okay.
But I think it's going to become, you know, well, how do you do that for an egg donor? You know, an egg donor who's had cancer and mm-hmm. who retrieved her eggs before the chemo treatment in order to have children. They're not embryos,
gosh,
but isn't that loss as equal as if though they were embryos, right?
Wow.
So, you know, legally, what's the remedy for that, right?
Mm-hmm.
In terms of the a cause of action, right?
Right.
Not terribly clear. They're not mm-mm. just property or quasi property or tissue. They are a future.
Yeah.
Right.
Right. They are a future of a family, which is the right to procreate. It's pretty strong, right? And that right has been taken away through
wow.
negligence or what have you. So there's a lot of legal issues that surround that. So I'm watching it.
Mm.
I'm concerned about it, especially in today's climate.
Mm.
But let's see what the legislature takes a look at, right?
Right.
And how other states evolve in that way, right?
Right.
There's some other precedents about dealing with, for example, I forgot a couple of cases about in fact, I had a client come to me the other day with they were dating, engaged, created embryos, broke up. Ex-fiance absolutely does not want her to be able to use the embryos for a transfer. And, you know, this is really her only chance, right?
Oh.
So, I mean, these issues do come up. So the right to be able to use them, what the loss is, if you can't, that's all
right.
Still being quantified and qualified in the court system. I'm sure we'll have inconsistent results in the courts based on the states and various policies and laws and interpretations.
Gosh.
So, but it brings up an interesting question too, because I've had represented a lot of intended parents who've had surrogates in Texas, right?
Okay.
Oh yeah, Texas.
And Texas being the hot button state these days for
yep.
a limitation of abortion.
You're right.
Also Idaho too, but surrogacy is not terribly popular in Idaho.
Yeah.
Well, first of all, there's a couple things. One is the providers who have would provide those termination mm-hmm. services don't really exist anymore. They've left the state.
Right.
Right. There are very few of them.
Wow.
Because the laws are unclear and, you know, they have no desire to be, you know, put in jail.
Right.
Right. And criminally, and criminally prosecuted potentially.
Whoa.
And the definition of when it's legal and when it's not in the circumstance completely undefined. Right.
Right. Right.
So I say to intended parents, you know, usually you're going to want to, and a majority of my clients have the embryo transfer in California, not all, but okay. typically have the embryo transfer in California. I said, you'll want to take your surrogate to California. Right.
Okay.
So that's a situation to consider. I mean, the again, I'm not a doctor, but you know, that's something to talk to your IVF doctor. What if she has preeclampsia? You know, what if it is that kind of emergency? What do you, you know, right. they'll look and see, hey, she's not, you know, anything could happen, but that's not in her history. That's not in her, you know, lifestyle, what have you. So, I mean, those are some things to consider, but again, because of the pre-genetic testing that's done on embryos and the quality and the advancement in embryo viability determination, I should say, it's really, really, really rare that I've ever had a situation where termination has been an issue, right?
Okay.
With the exception being triplets occasionally because of the survival rate and the danger to the surrogate, to the giving birth. But since there are that many multiple embryo transfers, that's rare.
Right.
Are there any stigmas that maybe you want to clear up either as an intended parent or being a lawyer in this field?
The first stigma is with, and it's really kind of a misnomer, which is, can the surrogate keep the baby? Okay.
Yeah.
That was the baby M case.
Yes.
25
My gosh,
years.
You're like the third person to say this. I need to go look this up.
Yeah. Right.
And that was also a traditional surrogacy. Okay.
Right.
That was a traditional surrogacy for those of your audience who aren't aware of that. A traditional surrogacy is where the surrogate's egg is used and the intended father. So there's a genetic connection to that surrogate. And that's still done occasionally today, but very, very rarely because we have egg retrieval. We have such an advanced technology that that's not necessary. Right. Mm-hmm. I have had, a brother in a same-sex marriage use a sister's egg, right?
Okay. Yep.
And she also carried, but that was done in a medical setting and a very different set of circumstances, right? So occasionally they do come up. So it's that stigma. No, the surrogate does not want children. In fact, with some intended parents who've not been able to get out here as quickly because of either I think there was a volcano, it was in Iceland, and there was difficulty flying and they couldn't, you know.
Right.
The surrogate was like, when are they coming?
Yeah.
Okay? When are they going to get here? Okay.
Right.
I want to get home and get back to my kids. Right.
Mm-hmm.
So that it's, you know, completely a misnomer. And especially if you go through an agency, no.
Yeah,
no. And most surrogates, Lisa, get into this. We've interviewed tons of them, and Kennedy's very active in the community. They get into this to help another family become a family, like to help. That's the main thing we hear from surrogates. Some of them, you know, rarely it's money. Okay, sure. And yes, they're compensated, most of them, for their time. But it's like Kennedy says it all the time. Like when you hand that baby over, the high you get from that is worth all of it. It's just worth all of it. It's
absolutely. I mean, think about it. Who is going to take pregnant people, women die in pregnancy, you know?
Yeah.
You know, childbirth is not foolproof, right?
Right.
And who is going to take that kind of risk?
Right.
Potentially become disabled or potentially become incapacitated for a while with bed rest.
Right.
And do that to keep a baby, especially if they're married, they got, you know, husband right there. Right. So yeah, that's, Exactly. You're exactly right. It's very altruistic. Mm-hmm. It's also a way for them to help their family and still be at home. Right. Childcare is very expensive. Yes. Right. Yes. So that's a key component as well, especially women with young children who aren't in school. Right. So that's, you're absolutely right.
Yeah. Yeah. There's, I think keeping, getting another baby is like the furthest thing from a surrogate's mind. 99.99% of them.
Whether you're gestational or traditional, because we've actually recently just talked to two traditional surrogates, and their stories were phenomenal. Mm-hmm. And we talked to intended parents that are on a traditional surrogacy right now. And the stigmas that are out there about it that we've heard, you know, as whispers and stuff, they're not what I had thought. They cut them all down for us. And I was like, oh, this is very interesting.
I mean, some people, it was, you know, even in our age range, it was kind of just ignorance of like, oh, did you have to sleep with her? They said to my ex-husband. It's like, jeez. Hello, technology.
Right. Yeah. Yeah. Well, even today, that's what's so wild. Like even today, because like, you know, it's 2024 and I get questions like, so like, did you have to? No, like there were no relations with me and an intended father. Like technology is so up there that it's down to like one embryo now. That's what they put in. Like it's amazing.
Well, it's funny too, because people, you know, people think, oh, this is so new. No, this dates to biblical times.
Uh-huh.
Yes.
Right?
Exactly.
You know, take a look at the Old Testament and Sarah and what happened there. Right. I mean, it's that was a gestational surrogate, right?
It was.
With using her own egg. I mean, it's a little bit of a hybrid. Yeah. But surrogacy and infertility is not new, and people have found a way to solve that. The drive to have a child is very strong. It's instinctual, it's biological, and it's social. So this is not this is not necessarily new in the desire to do this. This is just simply a new way to do it.
Right, exactly. And then the escrow companies are out there. They're handling the funds usually. In fact, when I did it, it came through the agency. I got my money. The agency wrote me a check. Like, so it wasn't separated. So I really see the differences from way back when to now.
I think there are more protections.
Thank you. I was just going to say that, especially for the surrogate. I know for the intended parent as well, but as a surrogate way back then, I just didn't feel like I had any protection. I just thought I was the house. I was the oven. That was it. And I didn't feel like I had support. Now it's completely done a 180. It's so nice to see.
And what's interesting is for those of your listeners who don't know, in California, you have to have all the money for the surrogate's compensation put in a third party escrow, either an attorney client account, which is highly governed, highly regulated, overseen. Right. For example, the California bar does audits now, random audits, or a third party escrow company, right? And there are escrow companies that specialize just in surrogacy, right? Because, and they have to go by the contract. They're not going to distribute money unless there's a term in the contract that says, yes, absolutely, go ahead and disperse this, right? So that's important. There's also new insurance programs that have come up for disability for surrogates, permanent disability in the event that comes. Yes, I've absolutely require all my clients to get it. It's $400. You know, it covers up to, I think you can get it up to $250,000 if she becomes permanently disabled as defined in the policy, of course.
Right. Wow.
And that's important. I know there's life insurance for the surrogate, but that, you know, permanent disability and loss of organs, right, which could happen.
Yeah.
You know, I think that's important to provide those protections.
Huge. Yeah.
That's crazy. I didn't know that one. I knew the escrow one, but is the escrow one new, like within the past, like 5 years? Yeah.
No, the escrow, I think it's a little older than that. It's under California Family Code 7962. Okay. And part of that is there's even been an escrow company that unfortunately I don't know is still operating, or fortunately is probably not still operating, that knew that a transfer had occurred but never got the funds and never told anybody. So again, that's another reason to get an attorney at the very beginning to make sure you've got the right escrow that's been around. I've worked with them all. I've been doing this a long time. Yeah. You know, I know who's got the reputation and who doesn't, right?
Right.
Yeah. And so kind of speaking on contracts though, like after delivery, when is this contract considered, when do your services go away? Like, when do they not, when do intended parent surrogates like not contact lawyers after
Well,
delivery?
typically after the birth, after we've delivered the judgment of parentage, right?
Okay.
Now, of course, if there's some issue, they'll call, but we do a really good job. So that's,
yeah.
Unless somebody has lost it, right, at the birth
Right.
clerk, which, you know, occasionally happens.
Oh,
There's
sure.
really not. I mean, we're available on an hourly rate after that if there's some
Okay.
complications, or if, like, for example, foreign counsel needs to talk to us about citizenship or something like that, you know, we're available on an hourly basis. But
Okay.
yeah, so typically, yes, it for us, it ends at birth.
So your flat fee covers up and through the birth and the birth judgment.
Yeah, and there are two. You pay for the contract first, and then we only require payment for the judgment of parentage after the surrogate's confirmed pregnant, right? Like,
Okay.
we don't, you know, it may not happen,
Sure.
so why hold on to
Right.
that money,
Right.
right?
Right. Makes sense.
They
Yeah.
can give it to me, I'll take it, but I,
Yeah.
you know, if I'm not going to use it or earn it, I shouldn't be charging for it.
There you go. Wow.
Your children are older, yes, Lisa?
Yes.
Yes. Can I ask
14
you,
plus.
14 plus, oh my gosh, they're teenagers.
Wow.
Bless your heart. So I have a question. If you don't want to answer, that's completely okay. But there are circulating accusations that are on social media that I'm sure you've seen. Like for us as surrogates, oh my gosh, your children are affected negatively. The fact that you aren't bringing this baby home, right? That's a thing that we get as surrogates. And then as intended parents, what we've seen is, oh my gosh, you're ripping the baby from the birth mother, which we all know is not the truth.
Not
So,
true.
but your children are older, are they're not affected negatively, right?
No, they, I mean,
No.
again, it's all been a discussion. It's not the what if. There's no genetic connection.
Right.
It's
Right.
not, there's not a loss for
Right.
them. It's like,
Right.
wow, man, you really went out of your way
Right.
to have us.
Oh,
Wowee,
wow.
you know? And this
Wow.
woman really, like, wow, she really helped us. That's
Oh.
amazing, right?
Oh, cool. Yeah.
So, you know, mommy's tummy was broken. We have pictures of the kids when they met Angel as they were older. I think they met her when they were 3, and we have a picture. We have a picture of
Oh.
me and Angel as she was getting bigger and, you know, bigger.
Yeah.
So yeah, it was a process. I mean, there are a lot of people who are anti-assisted reproductive technology, period, right?
Right,
We
yeah,
just had a comment not that long ago from the Pope, right?
right.
Surrogacy is illegal in all kinds of countries,
Yeah.
right?
In Italy, yeah.
It's illegal. It's
Yeah.
illegal. Like Italy being one example. It's illegal there to solicit or to, you know, when I spoke in Italy with an IVF doctor and another and an agency and another attorney, we did not know where we were going till the very last minute because the Italian authorities had threatened our arrest. It's illegal.
Whoa!
Yeah, it's
Of
illegal
your
there.
arrest? But you're not in Italy because you were
We were in
talking about
Italy at
it.
the time. We were speaking in Italy at the
And
time.
you were giving information out for those to solicit the use of surrogate.
We were giving
Whoa.
information just like this kind of talk, right?
Wow.
Oh,
That's
yeah. Oh, yeah.
crazy.
And it happened to another agency and group in who was going in France several years ago. Yeah.
My gosh. Oh
I
my
know. So they're
gosh.
always going to
Yeah.
be out there. There are those
For
people
sure.
who, and
Yeah.
I think part of it was when some of the third world countries were doing surrogacy, I think there was some exploitation,
Yeah. Yeah.
and that was not okay,
Right.
right? So I think that has bled over, but surrogacy in America, you know, that's much different.
It's done right.
It
Much
is done
better.
right. It's done
Yeah.
with everybody's protection in mind, and intended parents don't want the clients I have, they have no interest in exploiting. They want to say, you know, is this fair? We're requiring her to do
Yeah.
this
Oh.
and that. And I said, she's been educated about this. She
Right.
understands
Yeah.
she's to follow medical direction, that she might have taken that risk or, you know, decided to do that style of, you know, water birth or what have you,
Right.
but it's not her child. She understands that, and it's not her risk to take. Her
Right.
life comes first,
Yes.
right? She will
Yeah.
always make that decision, right? It
Yeah.
will never be your baby first if her life is in danger, right?
Right.
And I saw that happen once, unfortunately, where a surrogate went in for a routine check and found out she had breast cancer, and they had to
Oh.
terminate the pregnancy. I mean, that's extremely
Oh.
rare. right?
So sad.
But it was early. Yeah. It was early on, caught early for the surrogate, caught, you know, the pregnancy was very early. So, wow. You know, the parents went on to find another surrogate and have a transfer that worked. But that's an example of surrogate first, right?
Yeah, right. Because she's going to be there for her children who are already here.
Exactly. She needs to undergo cancer treatment immediately, right?
Needs to be a mom to her kids. Yeah.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Take care of herself first. So we're going to hear that. We saw that with the Melissa Cook case, trying to throw out the California surrogacy statute, right. That failed. So absolutely that's there. And I think the more podcasts, the more surrogates you talk to, the more it people like me speak as intended parents, the less mystery.
Right.
Again, it's just like secrecy, like keeping secrets from your kids, right? Yeah. Secrets become bad, right?
Yeah.
And I think the more light we shine on surrogacy, the better, because we want the industry to continue. We want the bad actors out, right? We want people to come here. It's a big, it's a big source of joy.
Yeah, it is. Absolutely.
It is. Thank you so much for taking the time to speak with us. Like,
what a wealth of knowledge. My gosh. I could listen to you for a long time.
Thank you. Yeah. No, I really love it. I'm happy to, you know, come back whenever you like and do a Q&A call in with intended parents. I love it. I love the field.
Yeah.
Oh my gosh. That would be amazing. We'll definitely stay in touch, because this is wonderful. And
absolutely. Like you said,
wealth of information. So thank you.
Oh, my pleasure. Yes.
Lisa, though, if somebody wanted to connect with you, though, or like have, you know, ask for your services, where would they find you? How could they contact you?
The best place is to email me. I'll get it directly. You can, you know, go to our website, but it's actually under construction and it's just an info, right? And who wants to send an anonymous email? My email, and I'll spell it for you, and you can put it in your, in the chat in your show notes, is Lisa, L-E-S-A, at Slaughter. lawgroup.com, S-L-A-U-G-H-T-E-R, lawgroup.com.
Perfect. Perfect. Oh my gosh. Amazing.
Well, thank you for asking me. I really like it. I love sharing it. I don't get to often do the happy part and share the practical and the professional. So, and I love surrogates, man. You guys are
sweet.
Thank you. We really appreciate people like you, you know, coming from an intended parent side and being willing to share your story, because, you know, at surrogates, we get asked a lot, like, why don't you guys have more intended parents on? And they're starting to trickle in, but it's more uncomfortable to ask intended parents, hey, come and share your public life. Like, we want to dive in. Whereas, like, they want to be private sometimes, and surrogates,
a lot of hurt there too. They've gone through a lot. Yeah.
And a lot of surrogates, they're like, let me share. Let me talk about it. And it's like, great. So we really appreciate it. And to hear the lawyer aspect of it. Thank you.
Compensation for California surrogates is super high, which is why a lot of people are choosing surrogates out of state, where it's less expensive. And I'm glad I can service those clients too.
Yeah.
It is quite up there. I will say, from my first time being a surrogate to my fourth time, it's quite the difference in compensation. Yeah, I bet. Yeah.
So are you doing it again? Or you're tapped out at 5, right?
Well, this will be my fourth and final.
Okay.
Yeah.
Too bad. You'd be a great surrogate for me to tell people about.
Oh, I know. Gosh darn. If I could, I would keep going. I'm only 29.
Okay, ladies.
Thank you so much, Lisa.
Thank you.
Really, honestly,
awesome. We'll do an anniversary podcast and see what Alabama did.
Okay, I love it. Perfect. Have a good
Take
one.
Care. Bye. Take care. Bye.
Wow.
A lot of info.
So much information. And she's so sweet.
Yeah. Wow. Amazing. I don't think she really repeated herself once. Like, it was just all this new stuff, like all this, like, oh my God.
No, it was great.
Yeah.
It was phenomenal.
Very, very thorough.
Very, very thrilled. Thank you so much for sharing your story and for sharing all this information, because it was very informative. Even though we talk to people in the same field, I still learn every single time.
Oh, I do too. And her kids are 14. Like,
I know, that's so crazy.
A long time ago. Like, these are some of the oldest kids. I think these are the oldest kids of intended parents we've talked to. Most of them are teenagers.
Oh, for sure. Because everybody's kind of like, now
exactly yeah so uh-huh. that aspect of it was kind of cool, and like her kids view it, you know, like, wow, you really wanted us and you went to the ends of the earth to get us. And
right.
It's kind of cool. Very cool.
Not that awful stigma that people want to throw out there or whatever. It's, no, it's all
happening. We know it's not true. So there we go.
I know. Yeah. No, not at all. Well, if anybody has any questions or stories that they would like to share, please feel free to reach out to us on Instagram at Stop Period Sit Period Surrogate. And this has been another episode of Stop Sit Surrogate with Kennedy and Ellen.
Bye, everyone.
Bye.
If you enjoyed this podcast, be sure to give us a like and subscribe. Also, check the link to our YouTube channel in the description.